Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. You've done it all. You've walked the tightrope of success and accomplished so much in your career. Now what? How do you keep redefining your success and expanding your emotional well-being? Join us to hear talk on mindset, motivation, and your growth in handling the challenges you've experienced both in circumstances and with yourself as a leader. Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders with your host, Tracy Crossley.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. And today I have with me Fernanda Carapina, right?
Yes, exactly. Fernanda Carapina.
Awesome. Thank you. And for those of you who are just tuning in, let me tell you guys a little bit about her so that you have some background as well. So she is a serial tech entrepreneur and the founder of We Global Studios, an AI-produced innovation studio and founderverse platform that develops and produces investor-ready, female-led startups at scale. Fernanda is also a published YA science fiction author, producer, former senior development studio executive, speaker, and a professional transformational coach on a mission to help women realize their full potential and make massive impact. Fernanda is originally from Portugal and resides in Los Angeles with her girls and poochies. Lovely. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. What kind of poochies do you have, by the way?
I have two Morkies, and I saw your little poochie in the background there. He's showing up for the show.
Yes, yeah. He is. Yes. I had to get the baby out of the room because he could get the zoomies in the middle, and that would be kind of a distraction.
For sure.
Yeah. So I want to ask the question that I usually ask everybody who comes on, and that is, when you were a little girl, what did you want to do when you grew up? What was the job, or what did you see yourself as?
So that's easy. I wanted to be a doctor. So from the time I was a little girl, that was really my dream. When I went to Penn, I went in as pre-med. I either wanted to be a brain surgeon, or I considered kind of psychiatry. So I was a biological basis of behavior major, which back then was pretty rare. And it was way before mind-body was even a thing, and or mindfulness, actually. And then my junior year, I pivoted.
And what made you pivot?
I was flunking chemistry. I was flunking chemistry, which obviously at Penn you don't want to do. And I was having a complete meltdown. I just thought, I'll never get into a good med school. And I remember this day, I called my dad on the phone and I said, and my family was not a family you called to like lament with your problems, because you don't do that in my family. But I did call, and he said, well, pack it up and come home. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that. Thanks for the warm and fuzzies. And I hung up, and I already had committed to doing my junior year abroad at Munich, which was part of, actually, oddly enough, the pre-med program. You had to have a language. And so I went to Munich. I did my full year there, which was the best year of my life. And I came back, switched majors to communications, went to Annenberg, and did my major in 1 year, and then went into entertainment.
Wow. And so entertainment wasn't something that you were dreaming about, like, oh, I want to grow up and be an actress or a director or anything of that nature at all?
Never. Uh-uh. No, it wasn't. I really wanted to heal. That was really, and I think I've really come full circle. I mean, when you kind of follow the breadcrumbs of my, you know, my very colorful life and all the things I've done, there is some logic to it if you understand kind of where I originally came from.
So, and I'm sure that we might understand that more as the conversation unfolds. So you went into communications, and with the idea of communications, you ended up in having a career as a studio executive.
Yeah, I mean, originally when I left Penn, my first job was at ABC, and I was a marketing analyst. I was also a marketing minor from Wharton, so it kind of made sense. So I went into the business side of broadcasting, working in sales. I was a marketing analyst. I used to write their big pitches for all their advertisers. And then from there, I went into program planning and scheduling at Lifetime, and then I got into the creative side, came out to LA and became a studio executive. So I really kind of learned the business from the sales side and from the financial side up, which I think was really advantageous back then. And I had the opportunity to be, you know, kind of one of the early female execs at Lifetime when Lifetime just launched. Literally, it was like women's programming Monday through Saturday, medical surgeries on Sunday. So when we launched, that's what it was. Yeah. It's like brain surgery on Sunday or like chick flicks on Monday.
That's interesting. Is that because women, I mean, I'm just going with women must have some kind of interest in that, obviously.
No, none, none whatsoever. It's just that when they launched and they were being carried, Sunday, just that time had been bought by another network. So they were sharing kind of that platform.
Okay.
Then as Lifetime got bigger, they then got the full Monday through Sunday. So you got to start somewhere.
You know, that's not a bad idea, actually, when you think about it, sharing a network, I guess, as long as it's not in too much opposition to your core audience, right?
Right. Exactly. It's like sharing space.
There you go. So mm-hmm. So, I'm always curious, when you were at that stage of your career, was the idea that there was something missing or that you wanted more? Like, obviously something led you from one thing to another. So I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. So I was at Lifetime for a few years and it was great. I loved it. But after having worked there and I had a great job, I mean, I worked directly for Pat Philly, who then went on to become head of ABC Entertainment. She ended up having a major job at NBC Universal in the news division. And it was a great experience and I loved working with her, but I was really ready to get involved in the creative process. So it was a big leap and I came out to LA and I fortunately was able to make that leap. It was very interesting how I kind of, I went about it, but it worked out really well. I ended up at Paramount with a big job.
Okay. And when you say interesting, is that a good story that you might want to share?
It is a good story, but you know, it's really the power. And I know this is something that you really, first of all, I can be incredibly courageous. Like I just don't give a shit. I try, you know, my motto is if other people do it, why can't I? It's helped me a lot because I just don't look at the stats. You know, people say, oh, if you're in business, you can never make it on the creative side. They'll never hire you. Right. So I think mm-hmm. the less you know, the better off you are, because then you go in with all that negative stuff running, those programs running in your head. And, you know, a friend of a friend set me up with a meeting at CBS. It was one of my first meetings. I'll never forget it. And I was sitting there and this particular executive loved me. He was like, oh my God, you're awesome. And he was like, I'm going to make some calls. And he literally got up, sat at his desk and he started rolling calls. He started calling and he was like head of comedy at CBS or director. Mm-hmm. And he called all these studio executives. So I like bing, bada bang, I got meeting after meeting after meeting. So it's like, you just never know, right? You just never know. So I got all these meetings. That's how I got into Paramount and, had a meeting there and then came back to New York and then nothing came of it. And I always had this theory that, you know, when you have meetings and you're looking for a job for anybody out there, you always want to have a good reason to follow up as opposed to just a thank you. So at that time they had asked me to like do some coverage on a script. And so I had some good excuses to follow up. So I kept following up with them and then I never heard from them. So one day I called them and this guy, Dan Fossey, who hired me, who I love, who ended up being a lifelong friend. I said, you know, Dan, I'm just surprised, like you never followed up. And he goes, oh, well, I thought from the meeting that, you know, you just would never be interested because the salary was so much lower than what you were making. And I was like, not so fast. And, you know, sometimes you don't know in a room what vibe you give out, right? Mm-hmm. So to make a long story short, I ended up flying on the private jet. I was with them in New York for the upfronts. And I went to dinner with the head of the TV division at the time in New York. I took him out and we got very drunk together. This was back in the day when you do that. And we went back to whatever, I don't know, it was the Carlisle. And he was like, so what do you want? And so I made a ridiculous number up, which was, I think, you know, a big jump, bigger than what I thought I wanted. And he was like, and it's yours. And here's an expense account. And when can you start? And all of a sudden, those money issues went out the door. And I started there. And I loved working there. I loved it. And I loved all the people there. It was phenomenal. So you just never know, you know, you just never know. And you have to be open to all kinds of possibilities. And I think sometimes as women in particular, we tend to be very much like by the rule book. This is what will work. This is what I should ask. And, you know, just go with the flow.
Yeah. Or you can always send a pie as a follow-up.
Exactly.
I did that. I actually sent a pie and I said, I want a piece of your pie. So anybody who's looking for a follow-up, you can do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Be creative.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Yeah.
I think it's that fear, though, that women feel, oh, gosh, I don't want to bother someone. Or if they're not calling me, that must be, you know, mean something about me. So I just better forget it. But I don't think that's true most of the time.
I don't think it's true at all. And I see that all the time, given the work that I'm doing, that there's a sense of needing permission, wanting it to be okay, not wanting to be rejected, fear of what the repercussions may be. And that's just because you're just not rooted in yourself, right? If you're rooted in yourself mm-hmm. and you're coming from a place of love, not to be too schmaltzy, but if you're coming from a really good place and you're being authentic and you're like, hey, I had a great interview, love what you do. You know, how could we make it work? And be funny, you know, and have fun with it. People will respond. But I think we try to be too perfect, too buttoned up. It depends on your industry. Obviously, if you're applying for a job in the insurance agent, you know, in the insurance business, it's very different. But if you're in creative industries, I think it's a positive.
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I mean, that shows that you have creativity of thinking. And that's what people are usually looking for in that way. And it's not necessarily artistic. It's the creative thinking, I think, that always matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I love this because I think it shows always that when you have tenacity and you have courage, that really nothing is impossible. And like you, I agree with, if I see someone else doing something, I go, oh, I can do that too. That means that there's no limitation, that I don't have to hold myself back. But I think a lot of women don't know if they are not clear on what they want, or it's they don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I just think they're, I'll give you a small little personal example. My daughter's applying for internships this past year she was, and there would come that time where she was like, should I follow up? Should I not follow up? It's been a week. I really, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we hire a lot of interns too. So, you know, young women starting out. And obviously you want to be respectful. If you email someone on Monday, you don't want to follow up right away on Tuesday, right? But at the end of the day, if you have to make a decision, if things, you know, as long as you're respectful, there's nothing wrong with being assertive. And I think quite frankly, people respect that because it shows them that you are confident and you're not afraid of what they may think or not think, you know, and that's attractive.
It is very attractive. I think that most women, though, hold themselves back because, again, it's that insecurity. So for you, you went from what you were doing. So you're at Paramount at this point, right? Or no?
Yep.
Yes. Okay. And so you're at Paramount. You're there. You're loving it. Everything is great. But obviously, there's something calling you, something saying, this isn't it. Or, gosh, there's somewhere else I need to be. So what happened?
Yes. Well, I have like a long roadmap, so this will cover our entire podcast. So I was there. I was a creative executive. So I was in charge. I was an executive director of development. So I did half hour development and hour development, which for people don't know, it means you're developing TV series, comedies and dramas back in the day. And you know, working with writers on developing the ideas, getting it to a script, casting it, producing those pilots. And then from there, you know, you would have the upfronts in New York, people would pick the pilots, and then it would go off to a different department. So I was the birthing department. That's all that we did. And that's really what I love to do. And that's why I love what I do today, because I'm just a a mama. I love to birth ideas. So I was doing that for a while and I was ready to go to the next level. I wanted more responsibility and I had people above me and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't get to the next level. So I ended up applying for jobs elsewhere. And I had a lot of opportunities at a bunch of different companies that wanted to hire me. And I ultimately selected to go to Brillstein Gray, which at the time was called Brillstein Gray Entertainment. And I was I became senior vice president of television, which was like a double jump in my title, which, again, you know, you have to be really aggressive when you move, you know, when you move your chess pieces around. And it was great. So there I developed TV series. All types of content there. And I stayed with the shows throughout the entire production. That was what was really unique and different about that place. And I got to work with Bernie Brillstein and Brad Gray, who unfortunately are no longer with us. And it was a great time to be in the business as well. And they had a management company for those people that don't know. So they represented Brad Pitt. They represented everybody from Saturday Night Live. I mean, some of the biggest comedians of all time would walk through the halls all the time and they would develop shows for them, movies for them. And then we would also work with outside people. Like we did Sopranos, the Larry Sanders Show, you know, a lot of really great shows.
That's wonderful. So, because I'm curious, and I know you, you know, we don't need to go through every step of your career, but where you ended up going back to school and becoming a therapist, but that you also moved outside of this and decided to be an entrepreneur. So, you know, that's not a decision everybody makes. A lot of people will make a corporate job or staying in corporations their lifelong career. So for you, that's what I'm thinking is something must have said, hey, this isn't it. Obviously it's outside of here.
Right. Well, after I left the business, or when I was at Brillstein Gray, I decided I wanted to take one step further and become a creative myself. So I wanted to become a writer-producer. So I left to do that. I started my own production company and started developing material. And I had a property that I had optioned myself. And I ended up, through that material, becoming a young adult science fiction novelist. And it was a graphic novel series that I wrote. And you know, was happily doing that, had left the business. So I wasn't an executive anymore, was married to an investment banker at the time. And during that process, I was trying to get pregnant, couldn't get pregnant, ended up getting pregnant. Our first daughter passed away. Aww. Traumatic time in my life. And really made me completely pivot my career and wanted to do community service and go back to, I think, the healing work that I had been called to in college. So I decided to go back to school. I got a master's at Pepperdine in clinical psych and started working through all my clinical hours as a school therapist in the inner city schools of LA, which I think to date is probably by far some of my most rewarding work I've ever done in my life. And did that for a number of years. I was, you know, to be a therapist, you have to do 3,000 hours, which is a ton of time. And towards the tail end of that, I ended up getting divorced. And then that led to another stage in my life. And I decided I wanted to go back into the media business, but I wanted to do it as an entrepreneur. So that's when I launched my first companies. And that's where I launched 4Digital, 4Digital Entertainment, which was a data analytics company focused on bot detection and social media. And I started creating content, producing content, and did that. And that's kind of how I dipped my toe. So I think for me, it was really situations in my life that I kind of feel like I was on a riverway and you get to a certain pass and there's like a big rock in the road and you're like, I'm going right, you know? And I think that now it's pretty common that people have different gigs. You know, you might have 2-3 things that you're passionate about. Back in the day, you didn't do that. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. And I have no regrets. And now that I do what I do at We Global, helping women to develop their ideas and help them launch and grow their businesses, all of this experience has really helped me a great deal to be effective.
I can imagine that it would. I think all of our experience always adds up to what we're currently doing. I mean, at least I know that in my case and several other women that I've talked to. I don't know that anybody has a traditional trajectory. I feel like most of us are always looking for, is this it? is there something else? And so it sounds like you've done that. And are you still doing that?
I'm still doing that. I mean, I feel like the beauty of what I'm doing now is we have about 175 companies on our platform. So I get an opportunity to work with founders who are in all different fields. So it's very stimulating, very interesting. The hard thing for me is when I see that there is a huge need in a particular area, and I feel like, oh, you know, I could go over there and kind of help that a little bit, you know, you get kind of sucked into certain things. So sometimes I have to say no. But this is it for me. I mean, I think this is the summation of all of my work, what I'm doing right now. I mean, I hope to do more speaking and more coaching and more thought leadership as a, as an individual woman. But beyond that, there's no company part two after this. This is my big empire that I want to build, because I feel this is something I'm building with a bunch of women. And I think it's so important to the future.
I agree with you, but I am curious about when you speak of women in the future, what kind of, I don't want to say abilities, because I believe that most people, it's not an ability issue. It's a confidence issue, or it's an issue of knowing where to go for resources. But, you know, for you, is that, you know, what is the strongest call that you have when it comes to the business you have right now?
So I'm not 100% sure that I'm going to answer this in the way that perhaps you want me to. And I'm doing a TEDx talk in about 3 weeks, and this may be part of it. But I, one of the pillars of We Global is building founder DNA. And that's really rooted in my work as a therapist and also just in my life story. And that is, I think that the mechanics which really drive only 20% of business success, you know, anybody can deliver that. There's a million organizations that can do that. And I think women are fully capable intellectually of crushing it. The 80% of business success is driven by psychology. And what I'd like to talk about is the radical center. It's where business, psychology, and the psyche meet. And that's where I think all the work is. I think that there is a way to win the game and there's a way to play the game. And we've been playing the game without really knowing what the rules of the game are. And I think in order for women to be successful, they need to understand what the rules are.
I agree. And so that leads me to, I sometimes bring statistics up. And one of the statistics that I'm sure you already know is one around how there are only, you know, 21% of the CEOs in the United States are female and the rest aren't. So I'm guessing what you're doing must be helping that situation along, or hoping to help that situation along.
Yeah, I mean, the goal of We Global Studios is to really create a massive pipeline of fundable CEOs and investor-ready startups that can kind of come in at the top of the funnel. So my goal is to help women get to first revenue. That's my job. Every day is how can I help you make money? So you can make 100,000, 200,000, half a million, a million. Because I feel if we can do that, then we're creating a legion of women that can go out there and can independently, and I'm not saying it's not that there aren't other obstacles, but they're at least in a better place from which to raise capital if that's what they choose to do. There's not enough people who are in the place that I want to be in, which is, you know, really the ground floor. Somebody has to be on the ground floor developing the talent up. But beyond that, women have to be able to have the right, and I don't want to use the word mindset because I think mindset's really just one small slither of this. They really have to understand what their own limitations are as women or as human beings, what their triggers are, where they're being held back. And I think we focus too much of the time on what the problems are and not enough of the time on what the solutions are. So at one point in my life, I was writing a screenplay and it was about driving cross country, a bunch of women on motorcycles who didn't know how to ride bikes. So I decided to go get my license to ride a bike. And so as I was taking my lessons, you know, the instructor is like, okay, whatever you do, if you're going down a street and you see a tree and you're like, I don't want to hit that tree, even though it's on the sidewalk, he goes, the last thing you want to do is look at the tree. because where you focus is where you go, because then the handlebars go over and you hit the tree. Mm-hmm. And that's really a metaphor for life. So if you're focusing on the problem, there's not enough money, there's not enough opportunity, not enough women in the CEO suite, not enough women, blah, 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 we all know, then it's just more of the same bullshit over and over and over again. What we need is millions of women saying, I'm going to be the next CEO. I'm going to be the next billionaire. I'm going to be the next, you know, and you let people call you crazy, you know, but you just every day you focus on that, you meditate on that, you fantasize about that, you visualize that, you feel that. And that's what's going to drive your success. But, you know, we don't do that. We go to dinner and we talk about our problems 24/7.
Yeah. That's just keeping you in Problemville, as far as I'm concerned. You can't really do that. I always ask people when I start working with them too, I'm like, okay, you're just focused on problems and solutions. So you can come up with solutions. But really, if you don't pay attention to a lot of problems, they self-correct anyways.
Right.
It's really focusing on what you just said and having that visual and all of that. I completely agree. And I feel like they should teach this early in life to many young girls, because I feel that that empowerment, because that is empowering to know that you have that ability. And I feel like that should be taught when they're young.
Yeah. The problem is that, you know, mothers can't teach what they don't know.
Right.
And that's our work to do. That's my personal work to do. I catch myself saying things at home that I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I just say? You know, inadvertently that might undermine my daughter's self-confidence. Now, fortunately, she's, you know, there's no stopping her. But I think that is our work. And I actually was sharing with a friend that I think our generation of women are such a unique generation of women, because we've had one foot in very traditional world that we've had to unlearn, right? So mm-hmm. a lot of us who have evolved or are trying to evolve, you know, are trying to kind of recode the way our brain is, so that we can step into this more realized version of ourselves. And hopefully the younger generations behind us won't have as much of that, but it's a legacy of issues. I mean, if you look at the history of women and what women have had to contend with 100 years, 200 years back, mm-hmm. I mean, we have come a long way, baby. And we need to keep forging ahead.
Yeah, I agree about the forging ahead part. I always say that, how much self-awareness does your mother have, and her mother, and, you know, her mother before that, and so on? Probably not a lot. So a lot of things get passed down without us even realizing it on a conscious level, that we're giving certain messages, you know, and then society is giving messages, and then those end up in our head. And then we're always reacting to it. Uh-oh, did I say too much? Uh-oh, did I do too much? You know, what are they going to think? I better be nice. I better take that back. I better, you know, act in a way where people are going to accept me and like me. And then it becomes imposter syndrome, because you're so disconnected from yourself. And I think that that is important, but I'm hoping, at least when, you know, from my perspective, that in this generation, you know, current generation, that somehow, some way at a younger age, that's starting to happen.
Yeah. And I also will just add, one of the things that I've had the ability to observe and never really truly appreciated is that when you get a group of women together that are like-minded in their overall goal, so like, for example, within our own organization, and they're supportive of one another, it really speeds up the current of success for the entire group. So that's why women's organizations that are really unified, not like chicken dinners once a year, right? But really unified women's groups who truly help each other pick up the phone on the behalf of the other women. Because I don't do luncheons, you know, I don't do ladies' luncheons, right? I have stuff to do. And, you know, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but I just mean like, feel like the planet is falling apart and we need to help other women. So if we do that, everybody wins. I mean, I see it all the time. Someone gets to another level and they say, oh, now I want to introduce you to so-and-so. Oh, now I want to help you, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the game changer. That truly is the game changer.
Yeah, I think that women do need to help women and not worry that a woman is going to come along and take what they have. And I think that there is still that aspect out there for a lot of women. I was reading a study that was done probably about 2 weeks ago at this point, and I'm going to screw the name of it up, but it was something about cutting the tall poppies, basically talking about female success and the issues around being a successful woman. And as much as I didn't really think that, you know, this was happening to the degree it is, they basically surveyed women in 103 countries, and they found that women were still being undermined, or women were still, you know, being left out of meetings. Or, I mean, there was a bunch of different statistics that they, you know, that they found through doing this. And I was kind of blown away. It was, you know, having their achievements dismissed and other people taking credit for their work. And these were high percentages. And I was really surprised. And I think it can be for some women, like, why bother? Why bother being successful if I'm going to be excluded? Or why bother being successful if nobody cares? Because, you know, a lot of people don't go, well, I want to be successful for myself. It's, what is it going to mean to other people? So what has been your experience? Because you are working with females who are launching businesses and getting out there. You know, what do you see from your angle?
Well, so there's two groups of women that I have the pleasure of working with a lot. One are entrepreneurs, the other are the advisors. So we have over 60 female advisors, most of whom are in the C-suite. And we have our own version of chiefs going. And I it's definitely true, because, you know, we're very close. So people share. I mean, women who are CEOs who don't have the kind of stock that they should, who don't have the kind of salary that they should, who then get replaced by somebody else who then gets a better package. Women who are running, you know, big media divisions and should be getting promoted, should have a different title because their counterparts have it, who are being, you know, disregarded because they're juggling so much and not using the resources of the company to delegate more, but they're not delegating more because they're stretched and they don't have the staff. They have double the workload. So it's like, screwed if you do. So it's going on all the time. And I think that's why a lot of women, when they reach a certain professional level, say, I'm done. I don't need this. I'm starting my own thing. And I think that's why a lot of women have left corporate America, if they can financially afford to do so, and start off on their own. And young people, by comparison, you know, young people who are great content creators are making $1 million or more easily working part-time. And they're like, why do I want a desk job? I can do my own thing. I can put in 4 hours a day, and I'm making $50,000 a month. I'm good.
That would be good, I think, for most people, you know, especially those who feel like they're, I don't want to say have the golden handcuffs, but they feel that they can't get out of that prison, or, oh gosh, I can't give up the salary. But sometimes there is a little dip to getting to where you want to go. And I think you have to be able to withstand any sort of, I don't want to say inconsistency, but really the unknown.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a very exciting time to be a woman right now. I think there's a lot of change, and there's a lot of opportunity for women to really step into their power and really execute their desires. They just have to really go for it.
Yeah. And I think that's always the key. And that will always be the key, is to really go for it. So before we wrap it up, is there anything that you would like to leave the audience with as far as any tips or anything that you haven't shared yet that you feel would be relevant to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that my greatest tip to anyone, whether you're a founder or whether you're, you know, a professional woman, is that to really invest time every day, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, whatever you can do. You could be walking your dog, or you can be journaling, but it's to really focus on the ideal vision of what it is you desire, and whether it's personal or professional, relationship, job, whatever it may be, and really see it. And most importantly, really feel it. Feel the emotion that you would feel if you already were there. Like they say, and I believe it's 100% true, if you want to be something, if you want to achieve something, you have to be it now. Like, you can't say, like, oh, I'm going to be a CEO in a year. No, you got to be a CEO now. You have to think like a CEO. You have to walk like a CEO. You have to feel like a CEO. And that is what will prepare you and open up those opportunities to start coming to you. You have to act as if, and you should journal as if it's already there. And some women might think it's silly. It's definitely not silly. It's the way to really accelerate these opportunities to come to you and commit wholeheartedly to them. And
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's all intrinsic to begin with. And then it's a reflection outside of you, what's inside of you anyways. So I love that. Yeah, I love that. So Fernanda, if anybody wanted to get in contact with you, how would they do that?
I think the best way to get in touch with me would be either through my LinkedIn, and my LinkedIn is Fernanda Carapina. It's very easy. You can't miss me. You can also reach out to me at fcarapina@weglobalstudios.com. And and our website is weglobalstudios.com as well. You can also reach out to us there. And if you happen to be in town in May, we're hosting our summit on the 12th of May at the Microsoft headquarters, and we would love to have all of you there. So you can find out more information on our website.
Wonderful. And thank you so much for everything you shared. It was very, I think, enlightening and empowering, and I'm very grateful that you came on today. So thank you.
It's great to be here, Tracy, and I love what you're doing, and I love your show.
Well, thank you. All right, you guys. Yeah. All right.
Take care.
So everybody, take care, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for joining today. For more information on Tracy and her programs, and to set up a discovery session, email business@tracycrossley.com. That's business@tracycrossley.com, and go to tracycrossley.com to get your free download entitled Stop Your Inner Dictator. Thank you for tuning in to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders.